And I mean, that is the thing, is like, all right, can you actually get to a place where you engage your fear, because there's a ton of energy there. So I don't ever counsel people into kind of saying, oh, what you need to do is block that out, cut that off. Because, you know, if you're going to undertake anything difficult, you know, like running, your fear is going to come up. You know, I know it from doing high intensity strength training. And I mean, that was always over in 20 minutes. But I mean, you'd get to a place where, you know, I was working with a strength training coach and super slow protocol. And every now and again, I thought I was going to die. And that energy, you know, because you say, no, you're not going anywhere. You just sit right there, your head forward, you know? Relax your face, you know, actually relax every single other muscle except the ones engaged in the appropriate exercise. You're going to leg press, it's going to be your quads, you know, your glutes, your calves to some extent, and amazing things would happen. So that fear wall was a basic wellspring of energy, if you can tap into it.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Mike Hines. Mike is a mindset coach and an author of a book called The Myth Guided Mind. That's MYTH. The Myth Guided Mind. Unleash your God-given genius at work and at home. We talk about all things mindset. He is a mindset coach as well. And one of the things that was of particular interest to me is that he has studied, like I have, the link between mind and body. And we talk a lot, kind of extensively, about what that is and his perspective on it. And this is something that, as ultramarathon runners, that I have found is important, and what I'm going to talk about in my mindset coaching, getting your mind and body to work in partnership so that you can do epic things and run long distances. That's the heart of what I think the ultramarathon mindset is about. This was a fun and lively conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Here it is, my conversation with Mike Hines. Welcome, Mike, to the show. I'm glad to have you.
Hey. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you and I were introduced by a mutual friend of mine, Sierra Carter, and you were on her podcast, and she said that you and I may have some alignment in kind of the mindset work that we do, and I know a little bit about you from your bio and I know you've hit kind of some hot buttons of an interest of something I've studied actually for probably 20 years, the link between mind and body. And so I know you've just got a book released. And I'll start out by asking, what was it that led you to say, I want to write a book? Because I mean, this is ultramarathon mindset. Writing a book is like running an ultramarathon. I mean, you get to a point in writing a book that you're like, why in the hell did I even start this? And when am I ever going to finish?
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. And then you have to add, I mean, I know the process is long, because I've written a book. And so I'm familiar with the process.
Yep. Well, and I mean, there's always, you know, the book that was in my mind 10 years ago, and then it's 9 years ago, and it's 8 years ago. It's like, this book is still not written. Like, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. And it really just came to that point. And I think, you know, just hearing a bit of your conversations with Sierra and a couple of your podcasts is like, when do you really make that commitment? Like, mm-hmm. when is the point when you just cross over and this is going to happen? I know for me, you know, I work, and one of my clients just said to me, he's like, you don't ever let me have an excuse. You've got an excuse. Like, and he caught me red-handed. And it's like, yeah. Well, here's the mindset guy getting some feedback saying, yeah. You know.
Well, for me, it was my wife is, I mean, my wife does not mince words with anybody. I mean, she always says what she's thinking. And it was, I can't remember how many times I mentioned it. And she said, when are you going to quit talking about it? Just sit your ass down in the chair and start writing. And yeah. That was before I was doing mindset stuff. So, but still,
there's a big lesson in it there.
Yeah. But yeah, there was still a lot of mindset work that I've done since then. But that book was a step along the path of to where I ended up now. So.
And I think this book is for me as well. It was something that, you know, really I just had to get off my chest. And, you know, the wonderful thing about the book already is people are saying, like, do you have the workbook or do you have the sequel? Or what about this happened? What about that happened? I was like, guys, you know, it's like.
And you thought you were finished when you got.
I love that you love me.
When you wrote the last page, I think you thought you were finished. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like sequels and series and workbooks. It's like, so it really did kind of, you know, go from maybe a 1K to a 10K to a marathon, an ultra marathon. It's just like, all right.
That's the way most of us who are running ultra marathons, you know, what's the next distance? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it was really profound. This book, so what I had to do was get out of my own way. I kind of talk and listen for a living, have for a couple of decades, and it's always been kind of a thing. Like, I'm just a voracious reader, love learning, mind, body. I started to learn about my teens. You saw a bit of my story. Like, that was not something came natural. I wasn't raised in a family that, you know, promoted this kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know,
so before we go too far, I would say, I forgot to ask you to introduce yourself and tell what you do, because we're talking about the book and like we both know, and the people who are listening to this go like, you really missed something, Eric. You should have started this show totally different.
There's me sliding in under the radar, ninja style. You know? Yeah. Well, my name's Mike Hines. I spent a couple of decades as a psychotherapist, and what I really started to notice is that there's a kind of a gap. There's a real problem in how we're thinking about mental illness, mental health, mental wealth, where people are capitalizing on mental illness versus like the true human potential. You know, noticing on some of your things, you've got, you know, how are you going to live an epic life? And I think what I started to look at and what I tune in when I listen to people, if I'm in front of them, I can see, I can feel is, hey, what's the genius in this person that's just waiting to come out? And how do we talk about that? And what was really weird is that, you know, I could hear, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to somebody, but I asked them something about, like, what's the absolute best thing about you? And the tears would come, or the inability to speak would happen. Like, oh, okay. So really going for greatness takes us to another place. And turns out that's not a therapy kind of a question. So I had mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, it was perfect timing, COVID, everybody's reinventing themselves. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go really work on this piece with people. And so I do it now. I'm executive coach and also personal coach. Mm-hmm. And I really do kind of tap into that piece of personal genius. The title in the book's kind of another wordplay is, you know, it's the myth-guided mind, but it's like, what is, you know, how do you unleash your inner genius or your God-given genius?
Mm-hmm. And that's another coach that I know. He doesn't use the word myth. He calls it the hero's journey, which Absolutely. Is kind of the framework that all mythology is kind of follows. I mean, and it's people who write say, you know, that there's really one kind, you know, or maybe just a couple of frameworks that almost all stories are based on. And so, he does a similar thing, and kind of like what I, you know, we're all in this coming at it from a different perspective, saying, you know, go after, you know, go be that hero, go be the epic, you know, have an epic life. And you're saying, you know, the myth, you know, you're looking at the mythology and telling the story. Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I think I bring to the table, and it was almost by accident, is that, you know, certainly studied lots of Joseph Campbell, but in the middle of writing my book, you know, I got to this point where I was lost. You know, the editor's kind of coming back to me and saying,
again, just like being in an ultra marathon, you know, you take a wrong turn and you end up running 5 extra miles.
Oh, and then I got to run them back again. Oh, this is so good. You know? And I get this text out of nowhere, and it's a friend, and she tells me about this myth of Chiron. And I won't go into the whole thing here, but he was a centaur. And he was basically the archetype of the wounded healer. I'd never heard of him. Now, since then, he's found movies and people are sending me scripts. And it's like, how did I never see this wounded healer based on my life? And what's kind of cool is it doesn't exactly fit to the hero's journey in some respects. And what a lot of people are coming out, like there's another writer out of Harvard, Maria Tatar, and she's taken a feminist perspective on it. There's people from other cultures and they're saying, hey, this is my mythology. Like one of the things that I realized is I've absolutely had a journey and I've absolutely had ups and downs. There's been periods of being lost. There's been periods of like right now where it's like, hey, I don't know what the next step is. I know I'm going the right direction. And it's just like, I just keep taking the next step and it reveals itself. You know, that's another piece to list, like, well, if you're going through fog, you know, you just kind of keep going. Don't sweat it. You know, you can see ground in front of you. Good. Yeah. You know, keep going.
You haven't walked off a cliff yet.
Nope. No. So there are different times, but I think one of the things that I realize is like, it wasn't just one way of looking at the world. There is no singular thing. And it was about me kind of claiming this piece of, okay, yeah, I was wounded. I went deep into healing, started looking into, you know, things that were not familiar to me from other cultures, things like energy. You know, we had Star Wars growing up, Bruce Lee movies growing up, you know, so, but I mean, that was the level of my understanding.
So what is, you say it's a myth guided. So a lot of people, you know, most, I don't know, I say maybe I'm making an assumption, but I would think there would be some people who would say, you know, that it make a connection that myth means fiction. And usually there's a different, I mean, I think in the way you're talking about myth is, would it be more to say is like, it's our own story. It's the story that we tell ourselves. Is that what you're kind of what you're talking about?
I would say that. Now, I mean, I'm trained. My first kind of incarnation was psychology at the University of Toronto, and at undergrad there. And then, you know, through great fortune and persistence, I taught first year psychology as a lab instructor. One of the people's on sabbatical. I couldn't find a replacement. Pick me. So I learned the science first, and you know, I like the kind of the neuroscience side of things. And we really do need it. Like we need some kind of factual basis. So, you know, if you're, I mean, I've never in the lab, so I'm not going to tell you, you know, the dorsomedial part of the frontal lobes does this, or like, it's, I'm not going to go there. And we crave that. We crave this singular logical answer of what exactly happens when, you know, I'm creative. What exactly happens when, you know, I'm overwhelmed with emotion, and what we're talking about here is, you know, where is my deep story? I can have like a political thing, but what is this set of beliefs, values, kind of customs perhaps, and also mindset that we've got that we probably built up from childhood? You know, it would have been mom, dad, you know, teachers, grandparents, you know, those people who really influence. That shapes us and that sets us on a particular path. And we literally kind of walk around and think around and feel around that reality we start with. My whole point of saying myth is that we all know we make emotional decisions. We don't make logical ones. I mean, you ask any car salesman, you go to any advertiser, they're like, oh yeah. You know, it's like, just imagine yourself sitting in this car. Now, which color would you like it in? They aren't pulling out your pocketbook first, but at the end of it, you know, they throw in some free car mats and you're like, wow, I got a great deal on this.
In fact, I read, it was like, I mean, neuroscience and subconscious. I mean, this is a journey I've been on for 20 years. I read about a guy who was, something had happened. He was not able to feel any emotions. His ability to make a decision for what he even had for lunch was almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that he wasn't able to access his emotions, it cut off his decision-making almost entirely.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where, like, we're actually much more interconnected, and where I actually go to is we're a mind-body whole. Mm-hmm. These parts of the brain absolutely play an important part, but they kind of come up into focus. It's not that one specific spot, and I'm just learning this, you know, from the hard neuroscientists, our brains are always working. It's not, you know, we used to have that, well, it's your left brain, it's your right brain. Mm-hmm. Well, no, a car doesn't drive around with two wheels and then, you know, someone comes along, the other two wheels off, and it's like, you know, both sides are always working. And, you know, a situation like this is more like an F1 car, you know, doing a turn. Well, sure, you know, if you're going left, that right front's gonna take a little more pressure. And so parts of the brain are gonna light up a little more than others in all of this. What's really kind of new is they're starting to see how much the body is integrated. And again, I think people that are in the arts always know about this. So, you know, if we're instructing an actor on how to portray somebody, and they really want to make sure they've got a compelling performance, they change how they walk around, they change how they lean in, they change, you know, their eye contact, they change their gestures, they change their pacing. You know, even you and I right now, we're conveying all kinds of information just through the tone of our voice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, I started to look more and more into, hey, what does this embodied stuff mean? And how is that in there? And what's weird is, you know, talk about making a long answer out of a short question.
I my wife would tell you I am an expert at that.
So I'm running around looking for scientists who've done this, and it's like, it turns out, you know, there's these really old stories, and you know, there are fairy tales, there are things that our grandparents taught us, there are classical mythology, and they have everything to do with these embodied energies and different forms of energies. You know, there's the different gods that at one time people would have prayed to. I suppose some places still do. But those energies and those deities, as it were, are actually more informative of how to change our deep inner story. Right. Mm-hmm. We can't logic our way out of some of these, like oftentimes out of a paper bag. Like, you've got to have a mindset. But then when you run into places, you know, where you're in the dark, where you're lost, people turn to stories.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a spot, what you really need to do is train yourself so you don't get in these spots. But if you're in a spot where it's life or death, or where it's perceived as such, or where your body's given out, or where your brain's telling you to quit, you actually want to have like that underlying thing that revolves around story that can help you through, you know, suffering a few bad thoughts or some physical discomfort or some searing pain, whatever the case may be.
So my question is, are these, you're talking about stories that are outside of ourselves, or you're talking about the stories that we tell ourselves, or do those interlap? I'm assuming you're saying that the stories, the mythologies, we can access that energy by incorporating those into our own kind of story and choosing to do that. Is that kind of where you're going?
I think the real point is to get conscious about this at some point in life and, you know, rewrite our own story, or, you know, become an architect for our own future, like build that building, or, you know, shape ourselves. If you want to use, you know, if we're made of clay, it's like actually engage that. Again, you know, from kind of the neuroscience, what we know is it is nature and nurture. So as infants, what happens is, you know, we are surrounded, and the degree of which we're loved and held and given a structure of discipline, given a sense of belonging, that becomes our wiring.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, we actually, so, you know, neurons that fire together wire together. So with repetition, we actually get wiring based on what's around us. Mm-hmm. So those stories are on the outside, then they become our insides. And then we need to have some life experience later on, usually comes through hardship. I mean, especially as men, you know, it's just like, you know, we tend to just wait until like we get really hit between the eyes by real life before we take, you know, we don't take the cues, you know, to say, wow, I'm living like in a state of hypnosis or zombie that like, I'm on old patterns. I've got an old story going. It's not serving me. It's not serving the people around me. Betcha it's time to actually do something. Like, why don't I tackle something really interesting instead?
Mm-hmm. So the question I was kind of getting at is what is the role of the stories that we tell ourselves? Because it is, especially as children, and I've had this in my life, is that, you know, we even as, you know, toddlers, you start interpreting things through story in with what happens. And so my parents would do things, and subconsciously I would integrate those behaviors into myself through story. And I'll give you an example. And so my dad was afraid of being competitive. And I could, right. he was a very competitive person, but I could always feel, and it was like, I was around him. I could feel he was always holding back. He's always holding himself back and not to push himself to really go all out to try to win. And he always kind of downplayed his performance. I interpreted that, because of my family was so religious, I interpreted that is that it had a religious basis. And I got to talk to my dad. And then that also, I mean, that's part of my story. Sorry, went through all my life and you know, affected me. That was kind of the limiting beliefs that I've had to deal with that brought me to being this mindset person, because that's what I had to overcome. And my dad's reason for that backing off of being competitive had nothing to do with religion. It was a personal thing and something that happened when he was a teenager. And so I had told myself the story incorrectly and made some assumptions. That was a major story in my life that really caused me a lot of limitations.
And that's it. I mean, you've just described one that's inherited. It wasn't even your own life experience, but there's somebody, you know, near and dear to you, the man you looked up to and admired and loved, and you picked on his limitations rather than kind of going for it on your own.
Yeah. Right? Well, it was his fear. It was his fear of that there was something inside of him that he knew that he could become almost vicious. And it was that he saw that in himself, that if he allowed himself to be as competitive as his drive was driving him, he could end up actually hurting other people. And that was what was holding him back.
Yeah.
I told myself a different story for a different reason.
Yeah.
So it was really my story about him. I mean, it was the way I interpreted his, how he was dealing it. I interpreted his story through my story.
And they tend to do that. You know, these things we pick up in the family tend to zigzag down, whether it, you know, it's something like that. Fear's fascinating. Like when I talk to people, it's almost one of the key things we have to talk about. And it's like, you know, fear is intended for our survival. It keeps us alive. But it should not be running the show.
Right.
Right. And people say, well, like, you got that right away. mindset guy. You know? But I tell you, and everyone's like, no, I'm afraid. What do you mean? No, what are you talking about?
as a child growing up, being fearful of everything and having to deal with that as well, I can say, yes, that is totally true, because that, you know, the fear is, you know, that's along with the story, there's that emotion of fear that usually, you know, the most memorable stories for me are the ones that scared me the most.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And those become like, they can become like our foundational points, or those can be our boundaries of where we know not to go too far. But one of the things I love talking to people about is like, hey, what's it serving for you now? Like, it's, you know, your fear, as it were, if it was a different person, or, you know, in kind of a different character, It's serving a purpose. It thinks it's keeping you alive. And every day that you're alive, yeah. Your fear is going to tell you at the end of the day, see, I kept you alive again.
Oh yeah. There's so many things that I could say to that. I'll leave it right there. Yes, I know.
And so, you know, if we don't ever get to the point where we kind of ask a couple questions and, you know, maybe actually go across the street or across the country, whatever it is that our fear has been telling us not to do, we never get a new experience and we don't ever kind of get to open things up. And so I kind of, you know, tell stories. This is like, hey, what, you know, what's this story got to do? So I'll pull out a small story at a time like this. And I say, well, you know what? Like, we need fear. But in the old days, you know, we used to have ships and, you know, somebody'd be in the crow's nest and they'd be looking out for other ships and they would haul her down and they'd see, you know, pirates or friendly ship or, you know, friend or foe. And it's very mm-hmm. straightforward. And our fear is just like that. You know, is it dangerous? I'm sending up an alert right now, but you don't ever want that guy who's in the crow's nest running down, taking over the steering wheel. You know, it's like, no, there's a captain of the ship. There's, you know, other members of the crew. You want your fear in its appropriate place, but you want to be running your own life.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. And that, and the fear, the stories you tell all have emotion attached to it. And fear is a very, very powerful emotion. And yep. So if you're telling yourself a story that fear is always, you know, if it always ends in fear, my brother-in-law used to talk about his mother and he said every time she would say, if you go into town or if you do something, you know, if you do this, you're going to end up being mugged and killed. You know, that was kind of her approach to life. Everything that was any out of the ordinary, that was what was going to happen to you.
And then if you didn't do those things, she was right. So, you know, right, just right. saving lives every day, you know. Yeah,
she kept herself alive for for 75 years.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the thing is like, all right, can you actually get to a place where you engage your fear, because there's a ton of energy there. So I don't ever counsel people into kind of saying, oh, what you need to do is block that out, cut that off. Because, you know, if you're going to undertake anything difficult, you know, like running, your fear is going to come up. You know, I know it from doing high intensity strength training. And I mean, that was always over in 20 minutes, but I mean, you'd get to a place where, you know, I was working with a strength training coach and super slow protocol. And every now and again, I thought I was going to die. Mm-hmm. And that energy, you know, because you say, no, you're not going anywhere. You just sit right there, your head forward, you know? Relax your face, you know, actually relax every single other muscle except the ones engaged in the appropriate exercise. Your mm-hmm. leg press, it's going to be your quads, you know, your glutes, calves to some extent. And amazing things would happen. So that fear wall was a basic wellspring of energy if you can tap into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And leave it in, because fear is a good thing. I mean, I see videos of people doing things that, you know, climbing, you know, runners, I mean, trail runners. And like, I love running trails. I see guys yeah. running mountain ridges where there's a cliff on each side and the trail's 6 inches wide. And, you know, it's the top of a mountain and they're making a video as well. And
they're controlling their own drone as they go through and they got the Facebook selfie.
Yeah. You know, I just watching those and or even more riding mountain bikes across the same, you know, and I can watch those types of things and I, you know, one misstep and you're dead. You know, that's my fear would keep me well away from, you know, well back from those kinds yeah. of risks. But so how do you tell yourself a story so that you don't end up living like, you know, afraid that you're going to get mugged and killed if you go outside of the house or you happen to go anywhere that, you know, outside of your normal little bubble, you know, on that extreme versus running running across the ridges of a mountain and with a cliff on each side. What kind of story do you tell yourself so you can somehow survive your life and still have a challenge?
I don't know about mountains, but sometimes, you know, just getting over to the kitchen to make coffee in the morning, I gotta get through a wall, right? So like there really is, you know, we all have certain risk tolerances and we've all got kind of successes and failures on our risks, and we all kind of are kind of tuned. Like we've got more or less emotion on the surface. Some people are passionate, happen to be one of those people. And some people are much cooler. So it's going to be individual. First of all, you got to know yourself. You know, I, like you, probably wouldn't run up a 6-inch wide thing. Now, as a kid, I used to ride my bikes around like that. I used to have a forest nearby, and every now and again, somebody would go down in the creek. It was about 20 feet. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever broke any bones. I don't know how, but it would happen, you know, and we'd still do it. So, I mean, what is the difference? And there are, you know, things change when we're in our 20s and the brain's not fully formed and some of those kinds of things, but, we do need to actually, and sometimes takes another person. Sometimes, people can just read a book or go, you know, like I learned starting with Star Wars and then picked up some Joseph Campbell. It's like, there's more to this mythology stuff. Like there's lessons in here. Some people find it, you know, in church. Like if you actually sit and listen, there's a ton of deep wisdom of how to face things, and it's mm-hmm. all around us. But it usually takes that kind of sitting down, you know, with whatever discomfort you have and saying, okay, I know you're here right now. You're not staying for dinner or anything, but I'm going to listen to what you have to say. Yeah. And I'm going to thank you for what you've got to offer. And then I'm going to politely ask you to leave. But there is a kind of situation where you have to build a new story. And, you know, the thing that I like about exercise or work is you do actually have a new experience to build that story from. You develop an exception to the rule. So, you know, in the case of your, I think it was, you said your aunt was like, you know what, I went over to the other side of town after dark. I didn't get mugged and killed. I better not tell her, but I've now got an exception to this rule. Mm-hmm. And then you can start to say, I wonder if there's any other exceptions to this rule. I wonder if there's something more possible for me. And you can start to get curious. So that's how we actually start to make another story. And it really helps if there's somebody else involved, but we don't have to have somebody else involved. Some people quicker at this, some people less, you know. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. So curiosity. I guess for, you know, for me, one of the what led me into running was I saw a friend of mine who did a 50 mile trail race, and I thought, you know, I bet I could do that. And it was, and so it was like, I took inspiration from somebody else's accomplishment and, you know, you talked about the, you know, kind of being in, I don't know if you said it now, or it was in your book about being in Groundhog Day, and that our from what I have lived in my life, and I've seen other people, is that we are in, you know, whatever story we've got our kind of our. The story is laid out. We're living our story, and it's kind of the story of Groundhog Day. And for, you know, we like the safety, we like the predictability. Our brains say, yeah, I'm keeping you safe. I'm keeping you from dying as long as you keep doing the same thing over and over. But there's something inside, like, you know, like Phil in the movie, of like, no, I know there's something more than this. I know this is not, I know there's better for me. In the movie, he used his situation to, you know, learn piano and do, you know, become the kind of person he really should have been to begin with.
Yep.
maybe he didn't want to, but that it almost forced him. But for those of us who, you know, it's like, maybe, you know, I want to be, you know, not necessarily have a whole different life, but I want to be better at what I'm doing and have feel more passion, feel more purpose than the life I'm living. So how does story kind of go in to help you get out of the, when you're in Groundhog Day to get yourself next place?
The writers of Groundhog Day were brilliant, and they were sneaky about it too, right? Because, mm-hmm. Like you just mentioned, he learned to play piano to an expert level over the course of his, first he's trying to do stupid things and, get away with things. And then he's like frustrated and trying to throw the toaster in the bathtub with himself, like end it, he goes through all these stages, but the writers kind of do this sneaky thing. It's like, you know what? We're living each day. And if we can benefit from our experience, that's where the real magic happens. And, I like to say, hey, we need to kind of consciously go into what's it like for me to face these same obstacles every day, and how am I growing? If you think about it, it's only through, whether it's gravity or we're kind of forcing ourselves on a new distance, a new weight, like it is that challenge where we grow muscle. We need some kind of stimulus. Mm-hmm. And if we can get aware that, hey, I'm on a conveyor belt, I'm in Groundhog Day, I think so many of us had that experience the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Is it over yet? but that's where, the real opportunity is, where we can see these things I can't change, but this part over here that's really important to me, I can. And maybe I can't even tell anybody else about it. Like, I don't know for you how quick you decided to tell people, well, I'm going to go run, a 50 mile because my friend did.
Right.
I didn't even tell my wife. We can talk about goal setting and the whole thing of proclaiming your goals too much or putting that out there too much. We think, oh yeah, it's going to hold me accountable. But for those kinds of things, what I was really getting at, I needed it for me. And so, so I told, I didn't tell my wife my plan until I'd registered for the race.
And I mean, I'm glad she loves you and knows that you do these sorts of things and stuck with you so long and all those kinds of things. But like there's a reality when we've got something that feels so important. And, like this piece of, as I'm saying genius and you're saying epic life, like what if there's that thing that we know is so important, but right now it's a seed and it's just a tender shoot. And we know this is like the oak tree that's going to be the center of our lives, mm-hmm. Metaphorically, but we can't tell anybody yet in case it gets squashed. And it is kind of like, okay, how do I actually honor, serve, protect this kind of sacred piece of me that's got to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those things are how we shape our own story.
Yeah.
You actually went after something that changed your life.
Yes. Yeah. And it was, for me, it was a step, it was at the end of, some of the limiting beliefs that I told you about, I had been dealing with through that year. And so I'd started with this mindset work already, and the running came up, and that was the thing, what you talked about. I had the seed, and the story that I told then was getting into ultramarathon running. And that was for me how I made that seedling flourish.
Yeah. And, if we were to, I didn't know you before, and, we're only looking kind of head and shoulders here, but I bet you any money, the kind of the silhouette you cut through the universe, like if we were to take a before picture of you and put it beside a picture now, or see you if we had video, how you walk around in the world now, it's going to be a different human. Like you're going to see it in your posture. You're going to see it in how you hold your chest. It's like there is going to be a difference in eye contact. When we really get a hold of this stuff, like we don't just change our mindset, we change our whole body mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think, I can't prove this one, but I think that's why I brought up Qi running with you. Like our actual energy and the energy we exude also changes. Mm-hmm. We drop down into a deeper center and we radiate from there.
Yes. Yeah. So since you, and this is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was the relationship between mind and body. And that, you know, most of the people who are, you know, that are listening to this podcast, you know, my theme is ultramarathon running. So, you know, there are a lot of runners. And so typically runners, they spend a lot of time and most of their focus is on training their body. So it's the physical training, and any mindset, mental training is kind of goes along with, oh, well, you know, I really don't feel like doing today's workout, but you know, I'm going to find the way to think myself into getting out the door and doing it. So that, which, you know, that's not bad, but when you're at mile 60 of a 100-mile race, it's the middle of the night and your body is telling you I'm done. That you need a little bit more in the mental tank than just what gets you out the door for training. So what, what do you see as far as in your experience, the relationship between mind and body? And does that relationship go both ways? Can you change your mind to influence your body and change your body to help your mind?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I do. And you know, if you kind of read my book or get to know me at all, you're gonna hear me say things like, you know, I am a body, not I am a mind that has a body. And you know, my brain is, you know, depends, maybe the most important organ, but other people differ in that opinion, right?
Well, and there are different schools of thought. I know,
you know, I always think of Homer Simpson about this one. You know, his gut runs the show and doesn't get along too well with his brain.
No, so I guess in relationship to that, what is, I guess, the relationship between the neuro network of the heart and the gut? Is that included in the whole makeup of who you are?
Well, absolutely it is. And I mean, if we look at, you know, there's fields like embryology where they look at how a human develops, and the brain and heart are very close together, and the brain, heart, and liver have to grow in direct proportion. So the ability to put blood around, purify it, and then, you know, for the nervous system to expand primarily with the brain, they all grow in direct proportion in the early phases as we grow inside the womb. We don't suddenly like transform by magic into some other kind of creature. We are still those organic creatures that are intimately interconnected. And there's tons and tons of pathways. You know, the vagus nerve is getting a lot of popularity right now, which, you know, probably not that relevant at the moment, but you'll see it in trauma. And it is these interconnections and just how connected we are, and sympathetic, parasympathetic responses and how to activate some of that. So mind and body are all working together. I kind of say things like, okay, so we know that we make all kinds of emotional decisions. We know that our body, you know, I'm of the opinion, like, I am a body. And then I have thoughts on top of it, which is a little bit the opposite of what you kind of describe most people have. You know, I have to drive my body to get to such and such a thing, for example. So it's a very kind of disembodied languaging, much more like the one that I grew up in. But as I learned over time, a much more powerful way to be in the world is to have a lived presence. And, you know, I'm kind of doing some coaching work with mind body people that are keto trained.
Okay.
So they're actually saying, yep. First thing I do is I plant my roots, my energetic roots down through my feet. You know, have the crown of my head raised up high to the sky. And, you know, then I inhabit width, and then I inhabit depth. And I have my energy center at the, you know, just below the belly button.
Just about, yeah. Very much like Tai Chi, which is, you know, what Chi running is based on, that same kind of thing. And so,
and I knew we'd have some crossover. So, yeah. I knew that.
Well, and then with Chi running, that is also very much, I mean, the Dantian is the center, not only the energy center, the center of mass of your body.
Yeah.
And so being aware of your body in space is a key component to Chi running and running with, you know, very, you know, efficient form.
And it, to me, you know, it starts to lend itself much better to, you know, how am I getting around in the world? So it's not just what race I'm running, but, you know, what life I'm living. Mm-hmm. Am I operating from this centered place? Am I aware of my center of mass? You know, I know people. There's a woman lives around the corner from me, and, you know, she's a black belt in Aikido, and, you know, goes to China and does things. Do some Tui show with her. So she says, okay, close your eyes, you know, blindfold if you have to, and now push me. And it's like, well, my eyes are closed. What is this? Some kind of like force thing, or, you know? And so she says, all right, it's not, but you can actually do it. You can actually feel where somebody else is in space in relation to you. And, you know, I think when people get very good at martial arts, they can defend themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I grew up saying, hearing, knowing for a fact that you have to see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very Western civilization type thing. It's like we're taught that. I mean, we're taught, you know, your vision is the most important thing. I mean, you know, we're very visual, and, you know, that not only visual, but in interpreting that in an intellectual, factual, mechanical universe.
And so, you know, this is one of those things of like exceptions to the rule. So I now have this thing where it's like, I can defend myself, not very well. I'm a novice, with my eyes closed. What else can I do? You know, can I walk around my apartment? Can I do this? Can I feel other people that are near me? And then the truth is, if you take the time to develop any of these things, you can. Now, do you need to? Well, it really depends on what you do for a living and who you live with, like, you know. But it lends itself to kind of like a bigger thing of like, oh, there is a mindset, and it's kind of like a universal one in our culture around, you know, what our senses are. And, you know, when we're talking about chi, we're bringing in things like interoceptive awareness and proprioceptive awareness that doesn't get a lot of airtime. You know, it's documented, it's in the literature. So, what is my inner sense of self? I'm going to say those words. And I guess.
Okay. Good.
and then proprioceptive is like, where are my body parts in space? So we've got these little energy centers. So, you know, is my arms up here, and, you know, my foot's hitting the ground there, and this one's off. And then as I move, so that's your proprioceptive awareness, your body in space is moving. Interoceptive is, you know, what are my sensations? What can I feel? You know, things like hunger are obvious ones we're all going to know about, but there's much more subtle ones as well. Can you feel your own energy? Interesting.
Well, and there are people who, you know, that, you know, practice meditation or, you know, mindfulness. You know, there's a lot of that language around, you know, mindfulness and being present. That kind of is brushing against that idea, is that we have more awareness than just the senses that we have.
Yeah. And I think it's brought it mainstream. And, you know, it is one of those things that almost, just to go back for a second, you know, when you said about mindset and runners, the other thing that I came across, and one of the pieces that got me doing a lot more high intensity training instead of going back to running, was injuries. My body was riddled with injuries. Like I couldn't even go and run. And I decided to get back in shape.
And injuries from running or injuries from other things?
Sports and variety of things. And, you know, the biggest one is I spent most of my 20s sitting, and that wounded me. Now, I mean, I'm learning to be a therapist, and I got another job, and I got this, and I got, but I'm sitting and sitting and sitting and sitting. After my studies are complete, I continue to sit, and I end up with back troubles. And I had to kind of rehabilitate myself out of that via strength training. But we end up injured. And that's like this huge, huge mindset opportunity. Like that word opportunity. Oh, this is a gift. Can I give that back? Like, is it Walmart? Can I return that one? Like, my mindset's going to grow. No way, pal. I don't want that.
So I guess I'll ask this. What what is the crossover between your mindset, you know, your mind and your body as far as healing? And you've done some of that. You've talked about the power of touch in your book. You know, what are the physical, I guess, you know, there are some, you know, like, you know, Christian scientists who they believe that, you know, it's all in your mind. I mean, you can use your mind to heal anything. How does that interaction go? Or you look at the placebo effect, you know, Joe Dispenza, one of his stories about his recovery from a shattered vertebra just by meditation is an amazing story. So, can you talk a little bit about, and, you know, for those of us who are runners, you know, we tend to put our bodies into places where it's, you know, there's most runners usually will, you can usually find an injury story in any group of runners that we're dealing with. Yeah. You know, someone in the group is dealing with some sort of injury. So how can we as humans, but, you know, primarily for runners, use our minds to help our bodies recover faster?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things there. One is how am I using myself, and am I actually appropriately running? Am I using my body the right way, or is there something I could kind of course correct, adjust? Do I need to kind of go and get a gait analysis? Like, is there
chi running instruction?
Chi running instruction? Yes.
Now approved as a chi running instructor. I would say yes. I would.
Let's give you a plug.
Could not let that one go.
So there is a kind of a conventional wisdom way of looking at things, and then there's like, all right, maybe I need to do a little better, because if you're taking on any kind of distance, you're actually gonna kind of expose places where your form falls apart, or where you had bad form, or where you don't have the right mindset. You know, we can do running to kind of turn things off, but if we take that too far, we aren't paying attention, mm-hmm. right? We can just go into, and they can be blissful states of, you know, being automatic, and it's like the hormones kick in, just like, I can do this forever. But, you know, if we're not paying attention, we can do ourselves injury. So sometimes there are things that can be corrected through somebody like yourself, and say, like, hey, let's have a look at what you're doing. Right. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Where is your chin when you're doing this?
Where's your chin? Where's your head?
Where is your head? Yeah. and sometimes, you know, like the thing that, you know, when I was running track in high school, is like my shoulders were stuck at my ears. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not that functional. And someone tells me, well, just relax that. Uh-huh. I did. You know,
they're still up there. Yeah.
They're still up there. You know,
that's a weak area for me. That's something I have to watch.
and, you know, like, so we're all going to have these kinds of things. So that's on the one side, like, what is it that you're doing that's kind of causing you to injure yourself, or be kind of more prone to getting an injury? You know, are you taking good care of yourself? That's one way to look at it. And then there is kind of recovery. And of course, you've got to have your diet right, and you've got to have your sleep right. I mean, those are just foundational. You know, you need the fuel going in, and you need the body having a chance to, like, rebuild. That's when mm-hmm. people are building sleeping. I'm sure everybody knows this. It's listening, but, you know, those are the basics.
Right? I know that a lot of runners, you know, that will say, I run so I can eat, and runners' diets are not as good as what you might expect in a lot of cases.
I know one who's quite public about saying she you know, does yeah. this so that yeah. she can eat carbs and bread yeah. and pasta mm-hmm. and, you know, but, you know, to go back to that thing, and it's over in the realm of, like, touch, and, you know, you bring in Joe Dispenza, I mean, we're suddenly talking about the ability to have kind of miracles, whether it's by placebo, whether there's, you know, another force, whether we are kind of acting as a channel for the divine, or It's just something that, you know, in our conventional wisdom, we don't really have a good name for, mm-hmm. you know, modern medicine, you know, I got lots of bad things to say about it, but I got a lot of good things to say about it. If I'm in a car accident, don't you dare take me over to my homeopath. I want to go straight to emergency. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if there is a crisis, if there is something serious like that, I want to go straight to the emergency room and I want to be handled by, you know, modern Western science. There's no two ways about it. But on this other side of like healing to get into, you know, full potential or to, we don't know a heck of a lot about it. You know, if we go over to our family physician and say, well, you know, nothing showed up on your blood test. I'm not sure, you know, I'm hitting 50. So I got, you know, one of the wonderful things about 50 is I got a whole slew of tests from my doctor and, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and you just hope it's just negative, right? Like that's all, you know, my future's now arrived. I've made it because I got to do all these blood tests and other tests and tests I don't want to mention. And, you know, like,
yeah,
it's part of my life. So that's where medicine's fantastic. You know, to actually look at things. And there's, you know, in my book, I talk about Tiffany Field, who did all this research on touch. And she starts, you know, right at infants. They gain weight faster, premature babies. They tend to stay alive. They tend to thrive when the babies are held, even born prematurely. And that wasn't something that we really did a whole lot of talking about. Mm-hmm. As we go through life, we still have a need for touch. And it's not the same. As we go along. But if we've got certain kinds of injuries, if we can get, you know, a very skilled massage therapist, physiotherapist, chiropractor, osteopath, whatever the case may be, especially if you can find someone who has got their consciousness tuned in to, hey, something magical can happen, something miraculous can happen, something mysterious is involved when two humans get together for the purpose of healing. Really remarkable things happen, and we've got stats showing it. You know, some people are better at this than others. Mm-hmm. What is that magic thing that they've got that the other person, well, you know, sometimes it's intuition. Like we put a lot of names on it. You know, you get the skeptics and they're saying that's placebo. You know, they put on the right white coat and
yeah.
you hang up the right things on the wall and, you know, and then you think you're cured, right?
Unfortunately, the word placebo has gotten a connotation in the science community as that it's not real. And, you know, Joe Dispenza's book is like, totally shows that, you know, the placebo effect may not be understood, but it's very real.
It's absolutely real.
Yeah, and it just don't, it does the same things. You know.
So why would you kind of dismiss something that, you know, 20% of the time is going to heal you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I'd be lining up. It's like, okay, take me there. You know, my knee injury's flaring up again. Like, I'm going to go sit and meditate first, you know?
Right. Well, and a lot of what, you know, Joe Dispenza talks about in his book, you know, you are the placebo is that, you know, that if the mindset that using your mindset, you can activate the placebo effect, you know, on, you know, just kind of not on demand, but you can activate it consciously. It's not something you have to be tricked into.
Yeah. And you know, the kind of the funny thing when you really want to get into these things is it's again getting out of like we need our facts. We need some of these things. Our logical brain's going to be, you know, I'm sure some of the listeners, they're going to have their BS red flags going off right now. Okay?
Yeah. You know?
And we need that side of our brains. But the piece of there's kind of two things. Like, so we need a singular focus to get certain goals done. We need to be almost obsessed and, you know, like some of your languages, you know, relentless forward progress. Like we need to have that tunnel vision at times. When we want to go in to heal something, if I'm staring at, you know, a wounded part of me and I've got, you know, that tunnel vision, that focus, that kind of look that bores into the other person, that's not going to be where my healing energy is. So I'm going to have to train myself if I'm trying to do what Joe Dispenza does and say, okay, I can use my mindset. One of the first things I've got to learn to do is almost, you know, and I say this is right around the eyes, is go out of that kind of laser focus and go into soft eyes. Mm-hmm. You're like, soft eyes, what's that? Well, it's a diffuse energy. And it's kind of using your peripheral, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm leaning back in the chair as people are listening and you're catching this on YouTube, you might've seen me do it. I take a deep breath and we all have this kind of knowing there's, you know, books about it. It's like that, the sense of being stared at, you know, we can have little things in the back of our neck kind of prick up. So we know. And what's weird is, you know, as a healer, I learned to, you know, use these soft eyes if I was approaching someone to get into a healing space. I learned to use these soft eyes if I'm going to try and work on healing myself. The other people who know this, and it was really weird, you know, people say, oh, yeah, you're a healer, you're a vegetarian. It's like, well, you know, kind of spent my 20s working a butcher shop. Keto diet kind of cured me of some IBS stuff, you know. It's like, you know. So I get talking to a guy who does bow hunting. And he said, and I have no idea how we got onto this conversation, a little bit like how you and I are talking, you know, just one thing leads to another. You know, we're unraveling miracles and mysteries of the universe right now. But he says, as a hunter, if he wants to get close enough to a deer that he can actually, you know, with handmade bow.
And you have to be pretty close. For people who don't understand, you've got to be with 30 yards or so. And that is kind of the ideal 30 or 40 yards. And beyond that, you don't shoot.
And it's exactly right. So, I mean, you've got some experience with this too, seems like. So
I've got experience in theory. I've never I've not been successful at it yet.
But that was his thing. He said until he said they are kind of like hyper attuned to being looked at. And if you can't approach in silence, if you haven't learned to descent your body, and then third, if you haven't learned those soft eyes so that you can get close enough before you take aim, because as soon as you take aim, you change the energy in your entire body and a prey animal can pick up on it. Mm-hmm. More than 30 yards away, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yes. From behind, not from, not even from its peripheral, right? So he said there's a whole other way. And he says, you know, he had a master help him learn how to do it, but he says it took a lot of practice. So to go from this kind of certain focus style into this diffuse healing energetic style that kind of lets you be at one with nature, dare I say, right? It's a very different energetic in the body.
So that's interesting. And you put that out there so that not only is it different energetic in your body, but that also radiates out to others. And so, I mean, there are people who will walk into a room and just, they say from my, you know, my past, the word was, it just, you know, there's a certain vibe. I don't know if that word is still in favor or not in the
I know that culture. Word, but you know, everyone beats me.
Yeah, there's,
but, you know.
There's a certain vibe to the room. We didn't know it back then, but we were talking kind of about the energy, there's a sense of rightness or wrongness when you walk into a room with a bunch of people in it, there's a mood, I guess, that's in the room that we tend to pick up even if we don't pay attention to it even.
And we do have words around it. It's like the energy change was palpable, or, you know, sports words are great for this, or, you know, but, you know, some of the stuff coming through 70s in particular is, oh yeah, we're vibing, you know, this is like, yes, we're on the same wavelength. And we know, you know, the counter example of that, we know the precise opposite. It's like the energy just got sucked out of the room and that person walked in, the party just went flat. Like, how did that happen? One person walked in the room and whatever state they were in shut down the fun. Like, and we've all had those experiences too. It's like, wow, like something's up with that person.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it all comes in through, it's your body, mind, you know, that whole energy that's there is a real thing. And we've all had, even the most logical people, I think, would have had those kinds of feelings. And I know typically we're trained to rely on our logic and downplay our intuition, but I know.
I think we need that. I think it's, you know, to survive, and at least in our society, we need to have that logic piece answered, but then it is kind of open up to the story and open up to that whole mind body awareness. There's a lady by the name of Amanda Blake. She's got her PhD or working on her PhD right now. And she calls the body as our ultimate sensing organ. Mm-hmm. And it is on this level of energy and felt sense and, you know, what we can tune into. So
yeah, one of the ladies that I've talked to, a lady, she's working, her book is Ultramarathon Mysticism. And so she looks at the difference, the relationship between suffering, physical effort and suffering and mystical experiences. And so kind of taps into the same idea of how we use our bodies and she's looking at areas of transcendence, but you're saying some very, very similar, but it's very tied, similar. But yours is tied with more with the idea of stories and mythology. So
in some sense, and you know, how to do that transformation. Like I'd say, you know, ultimately, like it is that kind of spiritual path that I talk to people about. I maybe never mention the words, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. People show up just looking for what they're looking for. Maybe it's a promotion. Maybe, you know, like it's a better relationship. Like we all start somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And part of it is knowing what you want. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I think, feel stuck and they don't, you know, I guess knowing what you want is learning how to tell a story of where you want to go. You know, that, you know, that sometimes we, you know, we have this craving, this feeling for something more, but we don't know how to put those words into a story. So.
Yeah. And you know what, there's a real truth to that, and we should never kind of let shame or, you know, any of those kinds of things get in the way. Like that's actually the point when we're supposed to ask for help. It's almost like the last thing we want to do at a point like that. Say, I'm lost. I have this kind of yearning. I don't know what it's for. I don't know what comes next. I feel stuck. You hear that word. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're just in a certain place. And it means, hey, we don't actually have a vision formed yet of where I want to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people would say, hey, you know, like that's time to pull out the darts and your world map and, you know, you throw something, you pick it. You know?
Do something crazy. Go,
yep.
You know, go run along the ridge of a mountain with a cliff on each side. Yeah.
You'll sure know you're alive then.
At least as long as you stay on top. Yeah.
Yep.
So how do tell me kind of how people can find you and you know, what who are the clients that you work with and how can people find your book?
Yeah. So the book's The Myth Guided Mind. It's available on Amazon. You know, at the time of this recording, we've been out for a week, so go get the book. That would be great. Best way to kind of get to know about who I am, where I've come from. The actual work I do, probably the easiest way is to catch me on LinkedIn these days. Working with leaders, the wonderful thing about being in the profession I am right now is there's so much churn. We have this thing called the Great Resignation going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know what to do next, or they know they're fed up, and the leaders of these companies are like, well, how are we going to keep people or replace them? So I tend to be working with a lot of those leaders right now, engaging the change. It's like the change has already happened, but how do we actually kind of make things better, make sure that, you know, we're all putting out our best business sense and sometimes personal sense. It's kind of, people just kind of say, this genius thing, can you talk to me more about that? I want to get into my genius zone. So, you know, so it's not always the business people, but you know, that's
well, and if you know, for business people too, I mean, I think there are people, and like we kind of talked about this, the stories that we have told ourselves, the myth that we're in keeps us at a level. And if you want to grow, if you want to go to the next level, you've got to learn how to craft your story for the next chapter, yep, of your life.
And make a new one.
You know, and you know, people who are executives, you know, entrepreneurs, there are people who know how to do that naturally. They may not even have words to describe what they're doing.
Yeah.
But for those of us who are kind of going along and going like, yeah, they can do it, but I haven't figured out how. that's really where a coach comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is moving out of that place of stuckness into kind of first out of isolation into conversation and then into co-creation. And then again, because we know, hey, we did this as infants, is like that stuff that's on the outside becomes the inside. If we get a really good coach and we have for, you know, even a short period of time, that becomes, you know, a piece of our new mindset. We really adopt that. So we walk around with the world with this new way of co-creating. It's like, hey, you know, the universe is cooperating with me, and I know how to influence it and keep finding people that are going to help me do that.
Yes.
So Facebook, LinkedIn, you can also find me there, but you know, I'll send you a Calendly link back. Like it's really straightforward. I don't give out my phone number, but you can have it once you're a client.
Yeah. Yeah. You've used your last chance to renew your car warranty, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, and I will have the show notes for this episode. We'll have all your links in there as well. So
Eric, it was absolutely a delight, even better than I thought it was going to be. And I was really looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. Well, and it's kind of funny because, you know, I don't know how other podcasters do it. I try to know a little bit about the people that I have on, but I don't want to know too much because I don't want to have my mind made up about who they are. I want my guests to reveal themselves in the way that is natural for them. And that's kind of what I feel like my job as a host is to help you express who you are the best way, you know, that makes you look good. You know, I don't want you to look.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
So I hope this has been good. I've enjoyed it. So thank you a lot for being here.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. You probably already have figured this out. I mentioned it at the beginning, but this connection between your mind and your body is critical for peak performance in running and also for goal setting. That is a very central part to what I do as a mindset coach. And so whether you're wanting to run an ultramarathon or just set some sort of big epic goal, the way your mind and body interacts is going to have a lot to do with your success. And so if I can help you out in any kind of goal that you're looking for, please send me a message, and you can contact me here through the podcast at our website where the show notes are. There's a link to the website, ultramindsetpodcast.run. The show notes for this show will be there along with the links. And also there's this place there you can leave comments, questions, and stories. You can do that by voice. You can record a comment and we can hear your voice. And in fact, if you have a story you'd like to tell, we'll put it on here at the end of the end and make sure that we tell people at the beginning to come and listen to your story. It is at ultramindsetpodcast.run. Also, if you did enjoy this episode or you know somebody who might like it as well, take a minute, send them a link to this episode. If you like the show, be sure to mention it. That is how we grow, and that's how I grow the show. And would appreciate that compliment if you would share it with other people. Remember, an ultra mindset is more than just running. If you're feeling stuck, let me help you out with some life coaching. Send me a DM on Instagram at Eric Dieter, or you can use the link ultramindsetpodcast.run. Leave me a voice message or a text. Be glad to see what I can do for you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.